Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, my guest today is Michael Epps Utley, who is the founder and CEO of GoEpps and Dodgeball Marketing. GoEpps is a digital marketing agency based in Nashville, Tennessee, serving clients coast to coast across North America. GoEpps provides patient and customer acquisition campaigns and recently launched a marketplace of pre-priced services called Dodgeball Marketing. Today, we're going to be discussing Michael's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thank you so much for joining us today, Michael.
Yeah, thank you, Julia, so much for having me. Really a pleasure to spend time with you today.
Perfect. So let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So to start, I'd love to hear, you know, what really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
That's great. It's a unique journey. It's a unique kind of life. It's not for everyone. I'm about 20 to 25 years into my work life, married to Tracy, and we've been married for 26 years, have four boys. And the biggest thing for me about being an entrepreneur is the freedom and the flexibility that we've had. Yeah. And the interesting thing is it's not just about not having a corporate job or not working for somebody else, but actually creating a culture and a company that offers a lot of flexibility, not just to me as the CEO and founder, but to everybody in the company. Mm-hmm. We have kind of a philosophy of doing excellent work and living excellent lives. And so we try to protect and maintain a lot of that flexibility for the entire team. And that's been one of the biggest drivers for me and being an entrepreneur, and is frankly one of the biggest payoffs for starting a company. So that's really at the root of what got me into the entrepreneur lifestyle.
That's so interesting. Very cool. And then, so how did you get into digital marketing?
Yeah, I have a liberal arts background. I went to school to get, I got a degree in creative writing, and then went to Vanderbilt to get through the divinity school, essentially a degree, a master's in history. Okay. So I thought that I wanted to work in higher education, and I thought that I was going to go get a PhD in history and be a teacher at a university. And when I was about halfway through graduate school, I had this moment where I saw two of my professors pass each other in the hallway, and they were two of my favorite people that I worked with very closely. And there was zero chemistry. I realized these guys are alone. These guys are sitting in their rooms alone, and they really don't need each other. And it sort of shifted me. And you know, I was young, you know, early 20s, really just out of undergrad and trying to figure out sort of what the future held. But I knew that the energy of being sort of this isolated monk type lifestyle wasn't the same energy as what I was going for. Right. I started to perk up and realize that business had a lot more challenge and a lot more creativity, and just a level of engagement between people on teams, that sort of thing. So it really shifted, and I realized, oh yeah, you know, business is where it's at. So my plan B, instead of going to teach, was to work in the publishing world. And so that became my plan A, and I got out of school and got a job at the publishing house. And within a few months, I migrated from sitting by myself editing books to where are the fun people? And the fun people were the sales and marketing people. And so within a few weeks, was offered a job in the marketing department, and was off to the races. So thankfully to a publisher at the time, Ann Miller, who saw something in me that I didn't even see in myself, said, hey, I want you to call these bookstores and just ask them how their inventory is. Ask them if they need more inventory. Just here's a list. And he never made it about sales. He made it about just help us with some new relationships. And I was kind of a talker and kind of a people person. And so that really worked really well. So thankfully, because of people trying to tap in to something in me that I didn't even see in myself, I realized it was this whole world of excitement and fun and kind of new conversations and new people and putting yourself out there and taking chances. And I was always really invigorated by that. And so that the internet was happening. So that became a lifelong career in digital marketing and sales. And that's really what I've done my entire work life since that first job out of school was digital. It was when the internet was just starting to happen that turned into building websites. And I just kept going with it and eventually started a company about a decade ago. But yeah, that's how I got into it. That was my entrance into the business.
Yeah, that's such an interesting journey. It's so fascinating to hear all these, you know, really unique stories. So you started in history and then got into publishing. And then, so 10 years ago, you started GoApps and Dodgeball Marketing. So yeah, tell us a little bit about, you know, what was that deciding factor that you were going to take the leap and start your own agency? What was that like?
Well, it was tough. The first time I tried, I failed. I was a director of marketing for an e-commerce company, and I had been promoted into that role and grew that business through some aggressive new online marketing from $18 million a year in revenue to $25 million a year in revenue. And I thought, man, I'm hot stuff. This is going great. And so I quit my job to go out on my own. And this is, you know, a young guy in his 30s who thinks he's going to have a mortgage and a wife and four kids and go start a company in addition to all that. And my timing could not have been worse. It was when the banking crisis hit and all of the work that I had lined up was in the construction industry. And so I had a day when the phone rang four times and each one was a cancellation of a contract. And it was absolutely devastating. And really what I had a vision for at that time, looking back on it now, it was really a vision to be a freelancer. It wasn't a vision to create a digital marketing agency.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, so that failure was tough, but in the long run, it ended up being one of the best things that could happen, but it was so hard to go through. I kind of had to go to my wife and my family and say, hey, listen, this isn't happening. I need to get a job. And so I took a job. We moved to the DC area for work. We kept our house in Nashville, but we moved up there. We ended up being up there for 4 years, but took a job as a VP with an online education startup, was with them for 2 years, and then with an agency for 2 years. And the time that I had in that world opened up a much bigger network of relationships and ways of seeing things, ways of thinking about things. Being on the agency side for 2 years was invaluable. So I had these corporate jobs in Nashville, but then I went up to DC and had the startup job and then this really great season of 2 years with an agency. And that was sort of like boot camp, and it all came together. And someone said something to me that was really valuable. It was a sort of a mentor and good friend, Rick Punkshar, said, "You'll let yourself down, but you won't let employees down." And that turned out to be really true. When you have employees, you're kind of on the hook for something very different. So while I was with the agency up there, my deal with them was, I'll fill in and supplement my income at night, nights and weekends if I want to. With consulting, you won't ever hear about it. And because of that, I had, you know, that kind of deal in place with them. I was able to start a little SEO package for sale and offer it through a friend of mine who had consulting. He was a consultant, had clients all over the US, and he wanted a little SEO package for his business coaching clients. So I put that together, and that turned into being a very successful program. I was very surprised by it, sort of caught off guard.
Yeah.
And Long story short, a mutual third friend of ours had a manufacturing company. It was about a $25 million a year manufacturing company. And they asked me to take a look at what they were doing and tell them how it could be better. And I did. And they said, hey, what if we really want to grow? And I was in the middle of a meeting presenting an SEO report, and they cut me short and said, hey, listen, Michael, I'm going to tell you what everybody in this room's thinking. And I thought, oh no, this is terrible. Nobody ever stops a meeting and says they're going to tell you what everybody's thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm in the middle of critiquing a website, telling them how their SEO could be better. And the president of the company says, what would it take for you to really grow our business? And I said, oh, okay, this is going in a different direction. So they were completely won over by my confidence, my knowledge, my grasp of the situation, but they realized they had asked the wrong question. The question they had asked was, how can our website be better? And what they really wanted to know halfway through the meeting was, how can you help us grow? And I asked them a couple of questions, and it took them a couple of weeks for them to get the answers back. But I said, what's a typical close rate when you do a live demo of your equipment? It was a commercial landscaping equipment company. I said, what's the close rate on a live demo? And then what's the average sale value of a first sale? And so they got that information back to me. I had done some keyword research and knew sort of the going rate for cost per click. And I knew, because of my background and my career in Nashville, what I could do with video, what I could do with SEO, what I could do with paid search, what I could do with a call center handling leads in real time, as opposed to going to voicemail and evaporating.
Yeah.
And I put all this in a spreadsheet, and they were committed to not growing faster than 20% per year. So I started with their size and 20% growth, backed it out, knew what I could do with each channel. And I came in and I said, I need $284,000 and I will grow you 20% over the next 12 months. And they said, yes. And within one lunch hour meeting, mm-hmm. I went from being a failure with a job for somebody else that wasn't my true self, you know, mm-hmm. but was a part of my story and a step in my path and a part of my journey that I'm thankful for now, but wasn't my ultimate destination. I went from that to having a gig for one client that was bigger than anything I thought would happen. So I immediately rang up friends back in Nashville, and one in particular, and said, put together a team. We got to start a new company. And we assembled and created the team in Nashville so that I could return to Nashville and run the company that I had sparked. And this came together. And so that friend became the first employee of the company. A year later, I wrapped up my work with the other agency and came back and became president of the company. And that was over 10 years ago. And it was the craziest, wildest ride, looking back, that I ever could have imagined. And I would not want to put my family through moving again. But now we look back on it, we're thankful for it. We said, as our field trip to DC. But it was, for an entrepreneur, it was a crazy journey and a weird mix of highs and lows, devastating defeat and higher peaks than I ever would have thought possible. And so that became the foundation we've been building on top of that since then.
So interesting. So that is how GoApps was born.
Yes.
Such a great story. I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
So, you know, in those early days, you know, you've assembled this team. What were some of those challenges that you had to overcome?
Yeah, really for the first year, it was completely trusting. A word that I go back to a lot lately, because it's one of the biggest challenges that I've faced as a leader of a growing company, mm-hmm. is the word trust. So it immediately became a challenge to develop and build this remote team. And I had no idea at the time what good training that would be for today.
Yes.
And so that was a unique factor in my situation. I was starting a company in an economic downturn yet again, 2012, mm-hmm. 2008, 2012, every presidential cycle is devastating for people trying to start something new. All the insecurity that the US presidential cycle puts into the atmosphere is completely unhelpful to people starting something new. But we were a fully remote team starting something brand new in another year of insecurity and everybody trying to read the tea leaves and, you know, see which way the wind's blowing. But yeah, trusting, being able to develop processes, standard operating procedures, delegate, and then have enough trust to just let people do their task. That was, I think, probably the biggest number one challenge. And then after that, just the ups and downs of doing the work. You know, digital marketing's tough. You know, when you're doing things like SEO, search engine optimization, we don't always know what Google's doing. You kind of have to work from experience.
Yeah.
And even at that time, I had a decade, or actually 14 years really of experience. It's still, you know, occasionally this is just what I think we should do next. And you have to have a lot of credibility and a lot of trust to be put in charge of somebody's program that's really going to impact their business. But yeah, so I think trust for others, trust for oneself, being willing to kind of let go of, I always think of a monkey swinging through the trees. You've got one vine in your hand, but there's that other vine over there, and you've just got to get the momentum and trust enough to let go of one vine to grab the next one. And that's really, really hard to do. And it's hard to do that day in, day out, over and over, year after year.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. If you had one growth tip that you could share with any up and coming agency owners, what would that be?
I would say, get a copy of the book Traction.
A good one.
This is kind of the newest, iteration in my life of a book called The Rockefeller Habits. And for agency folks, digital marketing agency folks, a lot of them will have seen and heard, you know, these books and been around them. But it's sort of the entrepreneur operating system. But yeah, I think having an operating system for your business helps you get away from focusing on what you're able to see or touch at any given moment and develop really strategic infrastructure around yourself. It's a way to create alignment. When you have a growing team, it gets challenging because different people have different assumptions. They have a lot of different assumptions. And sometimes you don't have enough time to clear away all those assumptions and those different perspectives before people have to be on the hook to go do something on their own. And so as an entrepreneur, you're kind of, you know, ready to kind of run this thing that's, you know, we call it genius with 1,000 helpers. Is the trap that people fall into. And while I'm by no means a genius, I do have a lot of confidence and sort of clear directive purpose in what I'm about. But you can only go so far telling people, please do this next, please do this next, please do this next. You have to develop independent operators who are functioning in coordination with one another in an unspoken language. And that unspoken language for us was always our philosophy until I discovered Traction. And then we began about a year ago implementing it in earnest. And so that's, for me, a tip for young entrepreneurs would be think bigger than just yourself and what you're able to implement on your own or directly, and start to develop people as leaders using an operating system like Rockefeller Habits or Traction.
So for any agencies looking to implement the EOS system, do you have any tips that you would recommend? Because it can be overwhelming implementing the whole system at once. I know with Review Robin, we gradually implemented parts of it. And what was that experience like for you guys?
Yeah, I think for us, we already were so deeply built around Rockefeller Habits, because in 2016, I sort of rebooted the company around Rockefeller Habits. And I had been introduced to Rockefeller Habits by a CEO of an e-commerce company I worked for. And my advice would be, this is funny, you never want to go against the host, but I would say don't implement it gradually. Decide that everyone on the team is going to, anyone who's kind of involved in an organization is going to absorb the material, give them about 2 weeks, and then just start with the big pieces, rocks, scorecard, core values, core focus, the different cadences of meetings. I would say just kind of jump in and just start doing it. I wouldn't let any client commitments or any work fall through the cracks as you're doing that. But I think whatever anyone is working from, it's probably them trying to evolve their way to the same destination. And so I think it's kind of like a pulling off the Band-Aid type situation. I can't just jump in and do it. We did it gradually, I don't know, 6-7 months ago, and it just turned out to be the wrong way to think about it. So lately we've just been full on, full speed into traction. How fast can we implement, get everything up and running, get all meetings on the schedule, switch over aggressively. And yeah. I think that's kind of the piece of advice on how to implement. The other thing would be have someone who's done it before. We have a partner board member who has implemented traction at a couple of companies. And then the other piece that's been good for us is I've surrounded myself with people who share the traction mindset. Mm-hmm. We joined EO this year or about a year ago. And so, being a part of EO, Entrepreneur Organization, Nashville is the biggest chapter in North America. So it's kind of a big community here. So being surrounded by people who are actively thinking that way and having that shared language, that's been a good support also.
Interesting. Yeah, that's great tips and advice. I love that. So I would love to pivot a little bit and talk about sales. So I know you have a background working in sales, which is really interesting. So what are your tips for bringing in more leads into your agency and then closing those prospects?
Yeah, we're in a real time of flux as an industry right now. We're in a high, I don't know what the term hyperinflation means in a technical way, but I know that it cost me $100 to put gas in my truck this week. Mm-hmm. And so we're in a very unique season for digital agencies. I think that we're in an inflection point where the way of doing it, I think there's sort of some big epochs or eras of digital marketing. I think there was kind of the Mad Men era, sort of pre results-based marketing. It was sort of, you know, an extension of the ad industry. And it was sort of, hey, we're the experts, we're creatives. Let us take the reins and we'll do something great with your brand. And then for about 20 years, you know, the 90s and the 2000s and the 2010s, we didn't really have the internet for all the 90s in a meaningful way for marketers, but say the last 20 years, you know, the 2000s and the 2010s, it was sort of a spreadsheet based approach or a marketing results or a digital chart based approach to thinking about what our value proposition was. Trust us, we're going to get the results that you want. I think in the last year coming out of COVID, we've entered a third wave. A third major period. And I think it's pre-priced discrete services that people can use. I think it's an app mindset. There's an app for that applied to digital marketing channels. And so I think we're entering a season when marketing executives, people who are inside companies, they might need a trusted guru, but for the most part, they know the difference now between paid social and paid search. Mm-hmm. Or SEO and PPC. Yeah. Marketing managers and executives inside of companies know what these terms mean now. They're all sort of hyper-focused on social media to their own detriment. But besides that, they all have a pretty good grasp of, you know, kind of what's out there. And I think that what's going to be hot and sort of the go-to solution for the next 10 years mm-hmm. is channel management that's essentially pre-identified sets of deliverables and pre-priced and more results-based pricing. So we're getting into this. We're doing patient acquisition with preset pricing. We do an analysis of someone's market mm-hmm. and what niche they're in. And we say, hey, you're doing dermatology and we know what markets you want to be in. We're going to deliver patient acquisition for $200 a new booking. Or $100 a new booking, depending on what it is. And so we're moving in this direction aggressively because we think that dollars are tight and they're just going to get tighter and tighter. And you have to be on, if you're going to be a marketing agency going forward, you're on the hook for results and guaranteed results. And I think that's a major change over the last 20 years of this industry.
Would you say as an agency, it's really important to just stay laser focused on the niche that you're serving? So for you guys, staying focused on serving the medical field, for example?
I think so, but with a caveat. We have a philosophy of having multiple hooks in the water at any given time.
Okay.
When I launched the company, I knew that I wasn't going to stay in Maryland. I knew I was going to bring my family back to our home city of Nashville. But also knew, hey, I'm going to get traction and get started in healthcare when I do this. Our first big client was in manufacturing. Previously, I had been focused on construction industry. So what I did is I sort of pulled all that together and said, okay, construction, the trades, so to speak, manufacturing, and healthcare. These are going to be our three big categories. And that's been a really good strategy. There have been times when the construction industry was being set back on its heels because of basically their access to capital. And during those times, healthcare has been very consistent. There have been other times when healthcare was being swung around up and down by major changes in the law through the ups and downs of Obamacare. So having multiple niches, I think, is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But I think the trap that people fall into, I think of it as two sort of ditches on either side of the path. One is not having any focus at all and saying, yeah, we do everything. What do you need? We're a good fit for everybody. Mm-hmm. And the other one is being niched down so much that you don't have any diversity in your dollars that are coming in. And so the lesson of 2008 for me that will never change throughout the rest of my life is don't have just one industry that you're serving. Have multiple. And so we've been strategic. Now we're breaking into the financial services industry. That's a growing area for us. And we're proposing work and doing more now than we ever have in higher education. And so even though we have these three big categories, they're really solid for us. We're adding a couple more because anywhere that we can do good, deep content work and strategy, and we know the space well enough to be an extremely helpful marketing agency, that's a good niche for us. And yeah, we're getting bigger. We're adding staff. We got a lot of folks on the team now and a lot of capabilities. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think it's a matter of having some diverse set of areas of focus and some deep knowledge and not falling into that trap of trying to be everything to everybody.
Yeah. I think that makes so much sense. That's really smart. Really, really great advice. So I would love to just hear about, you know, what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've been growing your marketing agency?
Wow. It's gotta be money. I think over the years, the scar tissue is built up around a particular experience that the entrepreneur goes through over and over. What happens when you choose to build a $1 million company is you, every time you get a win, any kind of victory, any success, you immediately shift your gaze to a higher destination on the horizon. And what that leads you to is to reinvest any excess, any capital that's available over payroll and the basics into growth. And that's what we've done over and over. And so that's why we've been able to consistently put new offers into the marketplace. So for us, we were GoEbs, digital marketing agency, it's all going great. And we said, we really think we need another brand to be sort of a set of pre-priced services, even let people check out on the website, purchase directly from the website. So we launched Dodgeball SEO, which we recently shifted over to dodgeballmarketing.com. Mm-hmm. So we could broaden what's offered there. Dodgeball Marketing was always sort of the ultimate destination. But yeah, I think the pain, the most consistent, deepest pain an entrepreneur goes through is having your hand on the throttle with money and choosing to reinvest for growth. And we've done that. And when we hit $1 million in 2019, it took me about 20 minutes of my, when I hit $1 million, felt like my brain turned around in my head. I couldn't believe we made it, our first $1 million sales year. And within about 20 minutes, I got this little lightning strike into my brain that said 10 million. And now we're on the growth trajectory to 10 million. And so it seems to be, just a curse of being an entrepreneur that whenever things are going well, you find a way to mess it up.
How can I take it to the next level?
Yeah. And so what that pushes you to is pushing the team, growing, evolving, changing. Mm-hmm. And for us over the last year, this meant bringing in some additional leaders. That was the right move because I was seeing some things where I didn't have the set of capabilities that I needed as a leader, but I needed to bring in and sort of break some work up into multiple people. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, money is number one, the biggest area of sort of scar tissue or, you know, brain trauma in the sense of carrying the load of stress over the history of the company. So I think for entrepreneurs, it's just one of those things. It's like, yeah, it's hard. It's hard to know when to push down and grow. But I think that's it. Yeah. Is money and growth.
Interesting. And, you know, do you have like a mentor that you would recommend working with? Do you work with a mentor at all to, you know, just work as kind of an advisor when you're in these situations where you're not kind of sure what move is the correct move to make?
Yeah, I really think that everyone needs to have two different groups. One or two different entities. One is a group of peers and the other is somebody who can just be an advisor. Mm-hmm. And it's good if we had a season in the company when I launched that we had a business coach, but also a group of mentees for that business coach who were all in the same boat, a vetted group of similarly minded people who were entrepreneurs. And so that was sort of the perfect balance. And what I'm doing now is really a mix between our board. We have a board now, and that is very helpful. So that's kind of my leadership component. But mm-hmm. then being a member of a forum through EO is my peer group component. So I think always having somebody functioning in those two ways. I have people I can go to when I just need them to tell me the right answer. And I also have people I can go to when I need to talk about how I feel. And Okay. Yeah, you need to kind of have both the head and the heart covered. And yep. sometimes it's great. You get kind of all of that in one set of relationships. Other times you got to piecemeal it because it's just too big for any one business coach. But you know, you have to have somebody who, you have to cover both the head and the heart. You need to feel correct and surrounded by somebody who can be supportive specifically in a business way, mm-hmm. And not your family. And it's different than your friends, unless all your friends are digital marketing people, or business owners. Which most people have a, you know, more diverse set of friends, mm-hmm. but yeah, I think covering those two bases is the real magic that I've sort of decided is my formula. And that's what I'm sticking to.
That's awesome. So I'm curious. So, you know, when you're growing, you're looking at growing your agency from, you know, 1 million to 10 million, what are you implementing into your agency? You know, are you implementing more services? What is that like? Are you expanding the niches that you're servicing? Could you give a little bit more insight into that?
Yeah. Radical shifting gears, massively different going from, I know David Baker and other folks, they have some good brackets, for how businesses behave. And I would say we were in kind of that 0 to 2 million bracket in our thinking for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we've shifted over now to kind of that 2 million to 10 million bracket in our thinking.
Yeah.
I think I could talk about this for hours, but I think to be helpful, there might be like two or three highlights I would mention. Number one, I covered a little bit. We brought in some partners to spread out the leadership.
Yep.
That meant me letting go of the sales function.
Oh, interesting.
And so our new president, Michelle Catalico, heads up our sales team, and she's also president of the company now. So I'm CEO founder. So that's a major, to take an entrepreneur who's very much a driver and very purposeful and to sort of let go of a lot of that control and responsibility, it's really hard to do.
Yep.
One of the best things that we ever could have done. Just no way around it. And just brutally, brutally, I was brutally afraid to let go of one vine and grab onto the next one going through that process.
Yeah.
So spreading around the leadership was a big one. Number two, I get a lot of my energy from being around people and just seeing faces, but we could not add staff fast enough over the last 2 years, by staying in Nashville. We had to spread out and add staff in other cities. And so we made a switch And this was in coordination with implementing Traction much more deeply. We switched to remote first. So no longer are we on Main Street in East Nashville. I am sitting here downtown in an office tower in Nashville with my little CEO private office, but our team is distributed now. And these are full-time staff. We have, you know, we have benefits, you know, we provide healthcare. These are employees, not vendors, not freelancers.
Right.
But we went remote first. That changed the cadence of meetings. That changed how you manage people. That changed how you observe and grow people. Radical shift, but it allowed us to pull people in from Miami, Atlanta, Nashville, other cities in the Northeast area. Massive shift in our management philosophy, the way we relate to one another, the way we think, the way we use our communications tools. We use Slack and Basecamp. That's kind of our, and then Google Suite, G Suite. And so that's whatever they're calling it this week. And so that's kind of our stack, our internal comms stack. And how we use that, we had to become, we treat Basecamp like a Zen garden. We're constantly pouring over it and removing tasks that are no longer going to happen because we changed something. But yeah, those two things, broadening the leadership team to develop a board and a new president, sharing some responsibilities. And then the third is like the flip side of that, just growing the people. Seeing our production manager grow to own the relationship with clients more and more. All that's very, very hard for an entrepreneur to do. It's very difficult for somebody with kind of a freelancer mindset to grow and get beyond themselves. And that's what I've had to do. So yeah, that's been the toughest. Those three things have been the biggest set of changes to go to a footing and a preparation to grow to 10 million.
Interesting. That's fascinating. Very cool. So we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly. I could listen to you talk all day about growing your agency, but unfortunately we are running out of time. So, you know, is there any sort of final words you'd like to share with our listeners? You know, just words of wisdom you think would be helpful to any agency owners who are listening?
Yeah, I think if you think the, owning an agency is going to be sort of the answer to something in your life that you need to kind of fill a hole in your heart, I would say be careful. You're going to have to be ready for some long nights. Whatever your reason for doing it is, it has to be what you're moving toward, not what you're running away from. If you have any inkling, any hint of going out on your own or thinking about starting something new because of sticking it to the man or getting away from corporate jobs or not wanting to work for other people, that's not going to be a good foundation. It really has to be built around a clear vision of, I think I could do this better, or I think I could create something special. It has to have a positive orientation. I'm in my late 40s, but over the years, the late nights and just the absolute grind of what it takes to win on behalf of every single client is so deeply challenging. At the end of the day, your batteries are going to run out very quickly if your foundation is something negative that you're getting away from as opposed to something positive you're pursuing. You have to have something that's constantly coming into clearer and clearer view that you can always move toward because the... just the idea of freedom is good, but it's very different than the idea of the absence of restrictions. The orientation is something positive, not negative, even though they may seem very similar or they may seem like two sides of a coin. They're actually substantially different when you're alone, cranking it through the night, getting that proposal perfect, or solving a technical campaign challenge. You got to be that person who's ready to be there at 3 a.m. when you can't have an employee do it. You got to be the person who's willing to bleed. And that's got to be for something that's positively oriented that you can see and understand and pursue day in, day out without giving up.
Yeah. So make sure you're really crystal clear on what your why is so that when times get tough, you're able to just fall back on that. And that's your, you know, part of your driving force.
I think so. And it has to be pretty comprehensive on a personal level. I failed the first time, and it was so brutal. Mm-hmm. It was so hard. It was so hard. We even to a silly degree, the power went out, and we had a problem with our HVAC when the power came back on, and I had to go borrow a space heater from someone in the neighborhood. And it was just this brutally deep, dark psychological hole that I was in. But somehow that didn't change the fact that I intended to build a successful company. Mm-hmm. No matter how bad that was, it didn't shake me. And I don't understand what that willingness was to tolerate challenge, but that was part of who I am, and it still is today. But it was because I was trying to build something. I could see the structure in front of me that I was going to build, even though I had been pushed back on the ground a number of times. That just ended up being the secret ingredient.
So interesting. All right. Well, we are going to be moving on to the fast five now, which are five rapid fire questions. So what is a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Well, I mentioned Traction and Rockefeller Habits.
Yep.
While it's a very popular book, it was deeply impactful to me, so I'm going to mention it. Mm-hmm. Jim Collins, Good to Great. What happened when I read that was I had this realization that project-based work didn't hold a candle to recurring revenue services. Mm-hmm. And that became my Good to Great moment. And then past the $1 million mark, I had other Good to Great moments. And so tracking historic revenue and margin numbers, I've seen a couple of inflection points. And the first Good to Great moment was recurring revenue. So that in 2012, that changed my life. And I haven't looked back since. And I would credit the deep insight into companies' historic highs and lows and getting stuck in a rut and being able to shake off that rut and see the bigger opportunity. I credit that book from Jim Collins with getting my head into that space and being open to what God would let me do in my time on this planet. And so that book meant a lot to me and was very impactful. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about it like it was the Bible, but it kind of was. It was so powerful for me. So yeah, Good to Great. Anybody young who isn't so jaded because they've seen it in the airport for the last 10 years, I would say read that book and really understand what it means for your life.
Amazing. And what does your morning routine look like?
Oh, that's great. I'm a father of four. We've had a tradition. I often take kids to school in the morning over the years. So a lot of my life has been kind of set by that. I read a book maybe a year and a half ago in Florida Keys called The 5 a.m. Club. And that I was always kind of a night person. And I sort of shook that off and became a little bit more of a morning person. Mm-hmm. And so I have just recently finished dropping kids off at school in the mornings. So my day kind of starts at 6 a.m. Dropping kids. And so now I'm kind of deciding again what my new routine is going to be. But it's typically a little bit of family time in the morning and then in the office. And I have good work-life balance now. I didn't in the past. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of up and moving, doing something in the morning and then coming into the office at a reasonable time. I'm typically here around 9 a.m. and I work 9 to 5 now. And so it's a very balanced reality because it was so hard for 10 years. I'm trying to sort of pull it back into the middle. But I am up pretty early and either taking kids to school or doing something.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. Real quick, going forward, I think what that time is going to consist of is study. I've been working on my private pilot's license. And I recently started flying solo. So I'm at the point in my training where I'm a solo pilot, but I have some study to do to get my written test and to do my finals. My final check rides and everything. So yeah, study is probably going to be my mornings here pretty soon going forward.
Oh, very cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then is there a CEO that you follow or study?
I'm a little curveball. One of the people who early on was really influential, who's not a CEO, but more of an academic, is a guy at Stanford named Steve Blank. Mm-hmm. And he's very popular in sort of the history of entrepreneurship and the idea of sort of a lean startup. You know, Eric Ries wrote Lean Startup. But Steve Blank and Stanford, they put a lot of content out on the internet for free, maybe 12, 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that became, for me, I've gone back to school and started working on an MBA. I've got about 12 hours toward an MBA. But that became sort of my lifeline to a lot of really good content that gave me a deeper business education than I had at the time that I was trying to figure out like how to make another go of it. And I would say that Steve Blank and the lectures from Stanford, all that content, I watched everything they ever put out. Mm-hmm. It was hours and hours and hours of material. And it's still, and it's classic material that's still very relevant and helpful. So I'd recommend that content to anyone.
Perfect. That's great. And then what is your favorite online tool?
You know, we use so many tools for search engine optimization. One of the tools that I really enjoy using for a quick, informal understanding of whether things are going well or going badly for a website is SpyFu. SpyFu is a really simple SEO tool. It's mm-hmm. easy for me to use and to share on my screen to show people the basics. So often when someone calls me or phones in, one of the first things we'll do is open up SpyFu and say, here's what your website looks like to a search engine. They know you for these topics. And often those topics are very different than what they want to be known for. So it's a little bit of a Pandora's box of conversations for the sales process. Mm-hmm. It raises more questions than it answers. And so suddenly they realize their website is not just what they can see when they look at their website, but it's this whole other universe of how the search engines see their brand and their business. And that's very eye-opening. And so a couple of simple charts in SpyFu and then drop in to see what keywords they're ranking for. That's typically for us a really, really helpful conversation starter mm-hmm. because at heart, we're educators. We really love educating our clients on internet stuff yep. and guiding them. And so that helps us start that conversation in a way that's visual, but not overwhelming to them, not knowing what they're looking at the first mm-hmm. time. And so, yeah, so I'm a big fan of SpyFu for that ease of use to pop it open and show people a chart.
Interesting. So it allows you to kind of do a bit of a website audit with potential clients then.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if they're not talking about SEO, but I can look at someone's historic search engine rankings and I can tell if there's anybody at the stick, anybody managing their digital presence or not. Mm-hmm. Often they've had the same 100, you know, they've been at the same level of keyword traction for 10 years. And I can say, oh, there's nobody managing this. Or I can see that it went up for a while and then it dropped way down and there yep. was no recovery. And it's like, okay, they launched a new website and it looked really good, but they had no idea how search engines work. You can see a lot in the historic record of someone's keyword rankings. And you can infer quite a bit about their strategy with just the basics of, is it good? Is it bad? Is it consistent? Is it inconsistent? Are there big shifts that are not related to a Google algorithm change? You know, were they a year late on being mobile ready? You know, there's quite a bit you can tell from the sort of historical record of keyword rankings. And that's a good conversation starter. And I really enjoy that.
That's great. Perfect. And then, so last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Oh gosh. Get emotionally healthy. My life the last few years has been a journey of understanding how the past creates the present. And the challenges that I set myself up for by wanting to be an entrepreneur and becoming an entrepreneur, I was not ready for in terms of my wholeness as a person. Mm-hmm. So whether it's through being a part of a church, having a counselor, having a really good relationship with your spouse and your friends, real open honesty about who you are, where you came from, what you're made of, what you want, what longings you have, what you hope for, what failures you're embarrassed about, being able to talk about those things and be really transparent with a group of similarly minded people or people you're close to and have a really good trusting relationship with. For me, that's a number of friends, the dads that I go out on the Appalachian Trail with every year, my members of my EO forum. My wife, Tracy, is amazing. She's the most patient person I've ever known with me to figure this thing out and get it right. You know, after failing so badly the first time, having a chance that she trusted me to try again. You have to be really open and transparent and vulnerable with people. And that is so hard. That is so hard. You know, especially, you know, for anybody who has employees, you kind of want to be strong and confident. You know, I'm a dad. I want to be like a good dad. But at the end of the day, what that means is being real, being truthful, talking about it when you're overwhelmed, saying, hey, I don't like this. I'm not comfortable with this. I don't know why, but we need to talk about it. Can we talk about it?
Yeah.
Having those tools in place on a personal level with your key relationships, critical, because I see a lot of people who get to the level that I'm at, and it's a trail of destruction around them. It's broken marriages, broken kids, broken friendships, broken selves. And I don't want that. I want to be a whole person. And if I could go back, I would have invested more time in getting truly vulnerable and real earlier in the process, because I fought it for a long time and that never helped me.
Yeah. Amazing. Such great advice. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Michael. It was a pleasure to really just pick your brain and get all your amazing insight. So thank you so much for joining us. And I really enjoyed our conversation.
Julia, thank you so much for having me. I hope for everyone that it was authentically good. Whoever hears this, I'd love to hear from you. Please connect with me on LinkedIn, drop me a note, heard you on Julia's podcast. I love hearing from people and just knowing that this is out there. So really appreciate the chance to talk about my experience and share my journey with you.
Yep. And we'll put all your contact information in the podcast description.
Awesome.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.